Today is April 10th, 1985. My name is Tika Ward. I am interviewing Peggy Mastropolo. We are at 710 West Main Street, Louisville, Kentucky. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. As we begin, I'd like you to tell me something about yourself.
Okay. My name's Peggy Mastropolo. I'm a former art teacher. I have a degree in art from Center College, which really doesn't say much because they only had one art teacher when I was there. And so I did not get a whole lot of opinions. Had I known I was going to major in art, I would have transferred, but because of scholarships, I did not transfer. Have a fine liberal arts education. I like many different areas of art. I've done a lot of stuff with textiles like batik, vegetable dyeing, weaving. I teach in my home, I teach pottery lessons, hand building. I'm very much into miniatures as for collectors. I make miniature food, hats, baskets for a friend of mine in Minnesota to sell. And I enjoy making little miniature exhibits. Haven't gotten to do much of that yet, but I intend to. So I kind of hit a lot of different areas in art. I would very much like to learn to watercolor, but haven't done that yet. Let's see.
When did you first meet Lou Tate or hear of her?
Okay. I first met Lou Tate when my Girl Scout troop went up there for, a meeting at the Little Loom House. I still have the thing that I wove. It was a little Kleenex holder. It's out of that nasty peach and green and ecru warp. We found one of those warps up there recently. Same colors, probably was the same warp. But I do still have the thing. I wove it up there and I really did like it. Later on in the Girl Scouts, we went somewhere and I wove some more, wove some placemats. And then after I graduated from college and began to teach, and I taught at Shelbyville High School, I was their first art teacher. Some of my children wanted to learn about weaving and I didn't know anything, really about it. And I saw that there was going to be an open house, and I went up to the open house and enjoyed myself and enjoyed the people and decided to take some lessons. And a girl named Mary Hammer and I rode out there for lessons. I took lessons after school and probably in the summertime and learned to weave on a three-harness loom and do all the little stuff. All the lace patterns and all the things that Lou Tate taught about the three-harness loom. And then later, I took a drafting course, and Vivian Hyatt and Sue Kendrick and probably Brenda Sheely and I were in the drafting course, and she would take coverlets and would teach us how to take down the drafts of the coverlets. I can't remember how to do it now, but I think if somebody showed me, I'd remember real fast. I have a whole notebook on notes that I took.
What kind of a technique did Lou Tate have when she was teaching you how to weave?
Okay. Lou Tate would tend to ramble on a lot, and she would tend to start in on something and then all of a sudden be off talking about something else. But like, when she would teach us to do the drafts, a lot of times she would have a coverlet and she would start in and say where she had gotten it. And then she'd start in about all the different names, because some of the patterns have a lot of different names. Let me think if I can give an illustration. I don't know. The chariot wheels. You got a lot of different names for the chariot wheel patterns, and they can all be the same pattern, but they're real romantic names, like somebody has given things. There's one funny little name, it's called Snail's Trail and Cat Track, and it has two little snowballs in the middle and little kind of op art type lines around it. And the snowball patterns have lots of different names. Sometimes the snowball was called a bachelor's button, sometimes it was called a snowball, and if it's woven backwards, like so what's on the bottom appears on the top, bottom being the underneath of the cloth, it's called something else. I can't remember what all that is either. It's been a long time. But you know, she would start talking about these and tell us different names, and a lot of the time she would tell us where she had learned this draft and where she had gotten it. Now, she had in her cabin, it was just incredible, these little pieces of paper that she had rolled up like little cigarettes, and they all had her little scrawly handwriting on them, and they had all these little drafts written down that she has collected over the years. And I mean, the walls were just stuffed with it. They could have been used for insulation. I mean, there was just so many of these little things. And she would go like up into the mountains, and I know she went to Cape Breton Island, up in Canada, and she would see all these people, and she would look at their coverlets and the things that they had woven and things that they had from the past, and she would draft these things down so that the patterns would not be lost, because you know, if nobody does this, then nobody knows how to weave them. And you know, if the drafts are there, some weaver is going to figure out how to do it from the drafts. So she was very, very concerned about that. But she had many little tales that she would tell about what things that had happened when she would collect her drafts, or little stories about the drafts themselves, or the patterns themselves. And they were very interesting. It's really kind of sad that I don't remember them, because it's all of these lessons probably took place anywhere from 11 to 15 years ago. And a lot's happened since then, and I have forgotten a lot since then.
What would she keep the drafts in? Just rolled up?
A lot of them were just rolled up and stuck in between the walls.
She had copied them down herself?
Yes. She'd copied them down.
So she would just go pull one down?
Oh, well, those were just stuck up there. She had written on pages. When we had our classes, she has these pages written up, and they're sort of stream of consciousness written down. But she would have the draft on it and a picture on it and a few things that told about it. And then she would have us, you know, work from that. And after we got to where we could write them down, something that she had planned out, like she would have the picture drawn out on the page, and she would have the paper graphed off the way we should do it, and then she'd make us write down the draft. And after that, we could get to that point, then she'd haul out a coverlet and say, okay, here, and she'd hand out the magnifying glasses, and we had to look at these threads and decide how it was done and write it down. And then after that, she had us warp a loom in a coverlet pattern, and I still have the piece that I wove. It was a chariot wheel. I wove it. It's of linen, just a natural colored linen, and then the warp is natural, and the weft is a kind of a rusty colored linen, and it's a real pretty chariot wheel. I was going to put it into a dress somehow. I never have managed to do that.
You said that you went to some of the open houses.
Oh yeah.
What were they like?
Oh, those were always a fun time, and It was kind of funny. I think Luke Tate engineered those open houses for a lot of reasons. One of them was that she liked to eat, but she was such an intense person that she never did really eat much. She'd open a tin can when she got hungry, but she never cooked. And she had a couple of hot plates, but I don't know that she had any other means to cook out there. So she'd have these open houses, and she'd find out, you know, what type of thing you like to cook, or what you made best, and then she'd say, why don't you bring that out for the open house? And she found out that I really like to cook, so she was always having me bring out all kinds of stuff to her open houses. And we used to come out there, and in the fall, I remember I used to make something with, like, apples and sweet potatoes and raisins and nuts and brown sugar, and I would bake it, and then out in the top house, it was before it was, of course, remodeled, and it was all cut up into rooms, and there was this old smelly kerosene stove, I think, and it would stay hot, and we would bring it already cooked, and then we just set it on the stove, and it would keep it warm until we got ready to eat it. And then, you know, a bunch of people the regulars, I guess you'd say, after the open house was over, would all sit around and have dinner together and you know, have a good time. I remember Ed and Betsy Dinas particularly, and John Prentice, and Sue Kendrick and Vivian Hyatt were the ones that were there most of the time when I was, and probably Ralph Calvert.
Did you ever go into Bottom House?
Maybe only once or twice, and only probably as far as the kitchen. I never really got into there. I had never really seen the whole Bottom House or even Wisteria until probably this fall.
What kinds of things would go on at the open houses?
Okay, well, I was involved a lot of that. After she found out that I liked to do vegetable dyeing, and Ed Dinas was up there doing vegetable dyeing, so Ed and I would do it together. We would set up all kinds of dye pots and gather all this junk, and it would, walnuts would rot out there in the soup waiting for us to have an open house, and she'd keep those on the back of the stove, and they'd just sort of stew there for a month or two, and then we'd have an open house. We would, Ed and I would get out there and dye people's yarns. Now, a lot of the time, that was the time, at the time, she was real interested in getting the New Zealand spinning wheel. And she would order them for people, and they would have a spinning workshop. And Sarah Bailey came, and Brother Kim came, and we would have these spinning workshops. And then Ed and I sometimes would dye the yarn that people spun, or else people could bring their own yarn, or a lot of times we just dyed up what we wanted to for fun. A lot of times we dyed up stuff for Lou Tate to use in projects. I don't really know that any of it ever got used.
Tell us some more about the dyeing.
Okay. I was really into it at school. We did a lot of it at school. In my classroom, kids would come in, it was just terrible. The smell would be all up and down the hall, depending on what I was dyeing that day. And some of my little black kids would come in and say, "Oh, you're cooking greens in here?" Because, you know, a lot of it really must smell like some of the stuff they ate at home. I would have my students collect dye stuff. And it got to that some few of my students would come to the open houses out at Lou Tate's, and they got very interested in it. So a few of them did come up, and but when we had the open houses out at Lou Tate's, you know, people would bring dye stuff, and we'd kind of go around the hill and gather stuff, and we could always find nuts, walnuts, and stuff to use. Oh, broom sedge from along the highway makes gorgeous colors, just beautiful. It depends on the mordant you use, but anywhere from gold to rust to green. Goldenrod, which is all over the place, makes nice yellows and golds. Marigolds, bloodroot, except that I really do hate to dig that up. Lilies of the valley, tomato vines. Just about anything that grows, you can boil it up and get dye out of it. The color may not always be too pleasing, but you can get it out of there. One thing I really like about the vegetable dyes is they do all seem to go together. They're such a pretty natural, muted, soft colors, and they all really do go very well together. Lou did some things for me that I really appreciated, in that after she found out that I was willing to work and do all these things for her, she started to trust me more and things. But I would have these crazy ideas, and she'd go along with me and let me do them. And I remember one time, the mordants in the dye, the mordant is the chemical that sets the dye into the yarn. Now, if alum mordant gives you just the natural color of the dye stuff, and if you put tin in, it brightens it considerably. If you put chrome in, it kind of gives it a goldish tint. If you put copper sulfate in, it'll give it a greenish tint. And if you put iron in, it will give it a dark, you know, a brownish tint. Now, what I usually did was pre-mordant all my wool, and that's a real pain in the neck, but it makes it so that you can use one dye bath for a lot of different colors. And if you mordant the wool in the mordants and then You know, just keep them nice so that you can use it. Then when you get a pot of dye going, you can throw 5 skeins of wool in that each have a different mordant in it and come out with 5 different colors. So that's really like a magic show. And of course, for these open houses, that was a lot of fun. I decided to carry it one step further. I mordanted up a bunch of fine wool and we warped it onto a loom in a plaid. And then I wove it off the loom in a plaid, and the mordanted yarn doesn't really have a lot of color, so you really couldn't tell that it was a plaid design. So I would weave it all up in a plaid design and cut it off the loom and throw it in the dye pot, and it would come out plaid. And I mean, it was a real gimmick, but you know, a lot of people really were fascinated by this. And Lou put up with this, and she let me do it. And, you know, she probably provided the fine yarn to do it. But, you know, she really saw that as an attention-getting thing. And there are pictures taken by somebody of me pulling one of these things out of the dye bath. We dummied up a picture looking like it was coming right off the loom and into the bath and out again. And it has this plain yarn, plain weaving going in and a plaid thing coming out. But you know, people really liked that. But she did let me do things like that a lot.
And then she would let you take things from the cabins.
Yes, definitely. Now that was a thing that, you know, a lot of people really didn't apparently get to do. But you know, she saw that I would do this, and she saw that my kids were interested, and her soft spot really was students and young students, and she saw that my kids were interested, and she would let me take some looms, and I took a few to school. But we had a dogwood festival in Shelbyville, and it was probably the first one they ever had, and she let me take a couple of looms, and she had me bring the kids in, and we warped the loom, and they learned how to use it, and we got all this rug yarn on shuttles and wound the shuttles and everything, and then took it out so that my high school children could teach the little kids that came to the Dogwood Festival how to weave. And basically the same type of thing we still do, you know, just give them a little taste of it. And that was very, very nice. I really did appreciate that.
Your interest in Lutate has continued after she died. Why is that?
Well, I do feel an allegiance to the place, and I have fond memories, even though, like many other people that went out there, I did get put out. I did leave for a while. Part of that, she would work a person and work a person and work a person, and she would sort of lead you on. Like, I wanted to buy a loom from her. She never would sell me a loom. Never. I finally got the 2 looms I have from other people, and Sue Kendrick, bless her heart, called me up and said, I have some tables Sam made. You can buy one from me. And so I did. But Lou would say, well, there might be a loom available. And then she'd go sell it to somebody else. She wouldn't sell it to you. I think she was really afraid that if you bought a loom, you were going to take it and not come back. I really do. Now, she wouldn't have had to be worried about that in my case, but she did work you and work you and work you, and she was getting a little, I expect, senile, and she would, you know, get very crabby at times. And I can't remember the exact circumstances, but anyway, I left before I got really put out, and it turned out at the time that I was pregnant and I was tired, and I just decided this is one thing I didn't have to do for a while. And then my husband got his PhD, and we left town and were gone for 8 years. And in the middle of that, Lou Tate died. So I did not get to see her after I left in about 1974, I guess, or 75. I didn't see her after that. I was very sorry to learn that she was ill. I still did get newsletters from time to time, and I was sorry to learn that she was ill and sorry to learn of her death. We did try and come to an open house one time when we were back for a vacation, and it was advertised as an open house, and my mother and daughter and I came out there, and there was no one there. And I don't know what happened on that account. But after I moved back to the area and I saw an open house and I saw that they had renovated Top House, I came out to the open house and got involved again. And in the meantime, I had kept in touch with Sue Kendrick too, and had visited her once while we were home on vacation. But I came out and saw that basically it's the same place. It's still people trying to run it without any funds. It still needs a lot of direction. It needs a full-time person that knows what they're doing to go out there and take care of it and direct traffic as it is. You know, there are a lot of people that want to do things for it. They just don't know what to do, and it gets a little confusing. But I go out there, I have been going out there, and keeping it open on Wednesdays. And when classes come through, Sally Moss and I teach the classes. Sally's mostly in charge of that. But I help her get ready, and we teach the little kids that come out there. And then if other people come out there on Wednesdays to weave, you know, I help them. I still do remember enough about it that most of their problems I can correct. there are people that come out and keep it open on Tuesdays.
I've seen you out there doing the teaching. Do you feel that you are really carrying on Lutate's tradition when you're teaching the young people?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because, you know, that's what she really loved, was teaching it to the children. And really, that's what I love, is teaching it to them. They have such a grand time out there, and they really, you can see it in their eyes. And there's this one little kid at church that came out with the collegiate kindergarten, and I didn't recognize her, and she came up to me just all grins, and she said hi, and I said hi, and she says, I remember you. And I thought, oh my gosh, where do you remember me from? And she said, you taught me how to weave. Well, you know, every time that kid sees me, her face just lights up, and I know that she had a wonderful experience out there that day. And I just hope that we can continue to do that for children in years to come.
You went out there first in the 50s as a member of the Girl Scouts. Mm-hmm. Then you returned early 1970, maybe 1969, as
right.
a teacher then yourself.
Right.
What are your memories of Lutate, first as a child and then as an adult?
Okay, I don't remember too much of her as a child. I do kind of remember her, you know, liking to teach children, and I remember having a good time out there as a child. I can't be very specific, but it was a good feeling that I remember. I remember her as an adult seeing that she did love to teach children, and that was what she was really interested in. Seeing her that she loved her research, as she called it, and she loved to do that. I remember seeing her not getting along very well with other adults. She always related real well to the children, however. I remember her being very concerned about a lot of things, and one of her concerns when I was there up until the time that I left was continuing the loom house on after she was no longer here. And I remember she was constantly saying, I want to turn the loom house over to a foundation, but you all have to prove to me that you want to do it and that you will continue this. And she was just very insistent on that. And it was very much in her mind. She talked about that a lot. I also, another concern of hers at the time I was up there, was she was very mad about a road that goes behind her house. It's called Possum Path. And of course, this was an old hill, and her buildings were probably the first buildings on that hill. And, you know, suburbia encroached, and you had a lot of houses built up. Now, there was quite a bit built up there when I went out there, and apparently one subdivision had just been built up the hill from her in this road called Possum Path, and they had not done a proper job of probably grading the road and preparing the land. And anyway, a lot, it would rain, and a lot of this stuff would wash down her hill, and her hill was eroding away. It still is. They did build a, probably after her death actually, they built a retaining wall up there, but when it storms, the driveway washes down. It is quite a steep hill. But she was very concerned about that, and I think there may have been some lawsuits or talks of lawsuits anyway, but, you know, Lou Tate did not really have any funds that I know about. She lived pretty much, I don't want to exactly say a hermit's life, but she didn't really go anywhere. She sold her car a long, long time ago. If she wanted to go anywhere, people took her. I remember taking her to the library. I remember taking her to the store and get yarn, but most of the time she'd say, hey, could you stop and pick this up? I'll give you the money when you get here, you know, and I was always willing to do that. So I used to go to yarn sales and buy rug yarn all the time for her and take it out there. So she really did not leave the hill. Her contact was with people that came to her.
You've even taken the weaving show on the road, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Now, I have not been to the state fair, but many others have been to the state fair with it. I have been with it to a shopping mall that was having some sort of crafts day type thing, and we demonstrated. I have been to Farmington. I have been to the water tower. In all cases, we loaded up all this junk, enough looms and enough warp and weft so that anybody who came by and wanted to give it a try could do it. And we, you know, give them a crash course in plain weave and let them sit down and weave. I have done that, and it's that part's been a lot of fun. I really like seeing the people and seeing their reactions. And I guess really one of the best things that I can say about the whole thing is that I have really been free to experiment, and that's one fond memory I have of Lou Tate, is that she did realize that I guess had enough sense to experiment in a right way, and she realized that I wasn't going to do anything really crazy, or I don't know, it's not necessarily crazy, but that I was not going to take advantage of her, I guess, and of what she was doing, but that she did let me experiment with my weaving, and especially with the dyeing end of it. She didn't really care about the dyeing, but she liked, you know, she liked to weave with the yarns, and she liked the people to be able to see that as part of the process. So she did let me experiment with in any way that I wanted to, and that really broadened me, and I feel like that, you know, that's one that is probably my fondest memory, is that she enabled me to broaden my horizons about weaving and about dyeing by just, you know, giving me the free rein to do it.
This is the end of the interview, side one, tape one.